Hello, I'm Keith Parent, and welcome to the best of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Today we go into the archives to bring you a program that was broadcast on the 28th of January, 2012. At the end of the program, we will also have a new story. Thank you for listening. So, sit back and enjoy. Many of you who are shortwave fans may have noticed something unusual, and that was a blackout of the bands. This solar storm, which occurred earlier this week, just didn't affect HF, but also satellite communications. So joining us now is our own propagation guru, Dan Hensley, to tell us a little bit more about what happened this week. Dan, I want to ask you a question. This week we saw a lot of solar activity. There was a lot of interruptions on the HF bands, but not just the HF bands. In fact, earlier this week, I was watching television at home, one of the satellite channels, and for about 2 hours, the signal kept breaking up, and I was getting pixels, then it was fine, and then there was freeze frame and everything else. What happened here? Was this caused by a very large geomagnetic storm?
Actually, it was. It was a result of an M-class solar flare that was predicted last week on the Media Network Plus show during the propagation forecast, and that M-class flare actually turned into a major solar storm. It interrupted, actually, frequencies, as far as I'm aware, between 14 megahertz, which is a 20-meter band, as far up as at least 1.2 gigahertz. I'm aware of several amateur radio repeaters in the United States that were having trouble effectively hearing signals, especially one in Phoenix, Arizona. I was listening to via CQ100. And there was an RF link put up there by someone associated with that group. And as these guys were going back and forth in the mobile trying to talk to each other, they're using 20, 30, 50 watts, and nobody can hear each other into the repeater. They're saying, the repeater's really noisy. We don't know why. This is really odd. And this is a UHF system. So I start looking around. I get on Facebook. And I'm looking around other places, and I run across it. Here we go. There was a solar storm.
One of the things that I noticed is that stations that for me are normally extremely clear, let's say like Radio Australia or Radio Japan, it was almost like silence, just as if they turned off the transmitters.
Yeah, that'll happen when a solar magnetic storm actually interrupts the radio propagation, and that's effectively what actually happened. It was so strong. It was like when I looked, it was about R2, maybe heading into an R3, and it can do that. It's like effectively throwing a blanket or plugging up a hole in your sink. It just stops the flow of everything.
And that was Dan Hensley. Dan will be back later on in the show to let us know what we can expect over the next 7 days.
Media Network Plus.
Yes, radio's stripping. I'm sure that some people might get excited by that. Anyway, as you may or may not know, I will be attending this year's SWL Winterfest in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. This year marks the 25th anniversary. So I thought that, you know, during the month of February, we would bring you a couple of one-on-one interviews with SWLs and what made them interested in the hobby. The first one is Mark Cody. He lives in Ontario, Canada, and is a member of the DX Association of Ontario. Mark was also the winner of the PCJ contest that we had for members of the Happy Station Club, and he received a Texan PL660. So we called him up at his home in Ontario, and this is what he had to say. Mark, you've been an SWL for many, many years now. What got you hooked as an SWL? Was it something that you came across by accident, or were you sort of led into that direction by, let's say, certain family members?
My late father was a ham in the early part of the century. His call letters were 3LJ, so that was before he had VE and VA. And I'm the last of seven kids, and I'm the only one that showed an interest in radio. So he's the one that told me all about it.
You know, it's interesting because you've been around for a while, and it's amazing. Do you look at, let's say, technology today and think back, wow, look at how and where we've come to?
Oh, yeah, for sure. From the tube sets and the boat anchors, and I've owned enough of them that if I had a dime for every radio that I drilled over, I'd be a rich man.
But when you think back, let's say, of all the receivers that you've had, is there something, let's say, about those old vacuum tube receivers that you miss?
I think it's the audio, because it's the same with amplifiers. Like today's a solid state can't beat a good old tube driven audio amplifier. So there's something about that. Now, granted, you didn't have the competing stations back then, like with CRI or all over the map. So the selectivity wasn't a big factor back then.
You know, recently there was somebody I was speaking to, and he started listening way back in the 1940s, and he got his first digital receiver in the 1990s, and he said, okay, granted, let's say, he said the digital receiver didn't have the same sound as the big Telefunken, you know, grand radio, but he says tuning to a station was much easier, just being able to punch in the, you know, the frequency, and that's it.
Yeah, for sure. They are still making sets with half-decent audio. Like, I like the audio from the Eaton E1. I'm presently using the new Elenco, the DXR8. It's got fairly good audio.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also have a couple of older radios, like the Panasonic RF2200, which is really good audio. And then I've got an old Drake SPR4, which isn't great audio, but it still pulls the signals out.
Now, you know, back in those days when you started as an SWL, most of the receivers were either made in Europe. They were made in Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, the United Kingdom. There was also a number of models that came from Japan. And in the last maybe 25 years, we've seen some coming from Japan, but now increasingly more from China. China, a company called Texan, is the largest manufacturer of shortwave radio sets in the world. And I remember the first Chinese-made SW receiver that I bought in 1996. I have to be honest, I thought it was a piece of junk. It was absolutely terrible. But when I think about, let's say, the products that Texan has been putting out for, let's say, the last 5 or 6 years, I'm really amazed.
Well, you can go back a little farther than that when Grundy came out with the Satellite 800, which was a Texan product, and that was in 2000. Mm-hmm. And I had that for several years until a hydro strike took it out. And that was, of course, then there was a lot of Drake technology in there as well.
Now, when you started listening, what were you mostly listening to?
I was listening to European broadcasters and tropical band stations.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was tickled pink when I could hear Australia.
You know, there's something that that I've heard a debate going on within the SWL community, because from what I've seen for the last 20 years or 25, 30 years from when I started listening, there seems to be this kind of a tension almost between SWLs and DXers. Would you agree with that?
That tension, I think, is a lot less these days.
Mm-hmm.
because there seems to be more people into a shortwave listening than DXing. I've always considered myself a hybrid, where I enjoy the DXing, but I also like sitting back and listening to programs as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a few years ago, I was speaking to an SWL from Australia, and he said what used to annoy him is he said sometimes people would put him in the same category as these as some people that say that would just write a station, send a reception report, and never listen again just to receive something. And he said, I used to hate being put in that category.
I knew a fair number of people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them who would just continually report just to get the latest edition of the QSL card. I dropped QSLing many, many years ago because there was one man that I met through the Ontario DX Association who basically either tape recorded or just wrote stuff down. He said, my logbook is my verification. And I certainly ended up saving a lot on postage.
Now, for today, we've seen a lot of cutbacks that have taken place, especially targeting North America. BBC World Service no longer targets their broadcasts there. Swiss Radio International, Deutsche Welle, Radio Nederland, there are still some on the air. Is it still easy to find stations to be able to listen to?
Well, you have to adjust your time. Like I find, like with Radio Netherlands and Deutsche Welle, because I'm now retired, I can listen to them in the afternoon for their Africa service, and I hear them quite well. It's the evenings where I notice you can go a couple hours and then wondering like who's on the air anymore.
Mm-hmm. But let's say mornings and afternoons are still good times then.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like I wake up with Radio Australia every morning,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to hear them here in the evening. But they're there in the morning, and if you want DX, you can pick up some Thailand and a few other countries, and then like you say the mid to late afternoon.
Now, let me guess, to see if my memory serves me correct, but the Radio Australia frequency, does that happen to be 9580?
Yeah.
It is.
And then at 1400, it's for an extra hour, so I'll switch over to 9590.
Mm-hmm.
But that 9580 frequency, that's been there since the dawn of time.
Well, you know, Nigel Holmes, who's the frequency manager of Radio Australia, when I was speaking to him, I said, 9580, I said, you target that towards the Pacific. But he said, it does, depending, say, 90% of the time, depending on propagation, gives an excellent signal into North America. Had you ever thought of changing? And he said, well, for all the time that I've been at Radio Australia, he said, we target it towards the Pacific because, as most Radio Australia transmissions, but he said we knew that it got into North America, which is the only reason why we keep that frequency and we don't change it.
Yeah, for sure. And I know I sent an email once to Saturday Night Country, and I got a nice reply back that Felicity Urquhart was quite pleased that I'm listening to her every Saturday morning.
not too long ago, I was talking to a friend of mine in on the west coast of Canada, and we were talking on Facebook, and I was saying to him, I said, okay, tell me if you can pick up this frequency, tell me if you can pick up this one, and he was doing the same, and it was interesting because I believe it was Radio New Zealand. I gave him a Radio New Zealand frequency, which is targeted towards the Pacific, which here in Taiwan, we cannot pick up. But he was able to get it on the west coast of Canada, which is quite amazing.
Our founder of the ODXA, Harold Sellers, he's since moved out to the left coast. And it's amazing some of the stuff he picks up from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long have you been a member of the Ontario DX Club?
30-plus years.
30-plus years. And is the Ontario DS Club only have members in Canada or also in other parts of the world as well?
Well, we eliminated membership a couple of years ago, so everything's free on the net, so you don't have to be a member. You just log on or just go to odxa.on.ca, and you can access our magazine. And we accept, like I handle the international loggings column, and we accept loggings from all over the world.
You know, you think, because there's another organization in Canada called the Canadian International DS Club, that Sheldon Harvey, I don't know if he's still running it, but he was running it for a long time. Was there ever like a friction between the two clubs?
Not really. The only, I remember about 25, 30 years ago, there was a policy that if you were an editor for one, you couldn't do the same with the other club. It was just, there was a distinction. Like, if you're on the board of directors of one, you couldn't be, you know, on the other. But aside from that, it was a fairly amicable arrangement.
Now, Mark, you live just outside of Toronto in Peterborough, Ontario. Is it easy, let's say I was to head to Peterborough or head to Toronto, is it easy to find SWL receivers in those two places?
For sure. You've got, there's two ham radio stores, Durham Radio, which is in a Toronto suburb called Whitby, and there's Radio World, which is in the north end of Toronto. They carry like Eaton and Icom products.
Now, you just mentioned a moment ago that you've collected so many receivers over the years. If I was to, let's say, have a mental picture in my head, would my mental picture be just shelves and of rows and rows and rows of radios?
Not that bad. there's a friend of mine in London, Robert Ross. His basement's like that. I've basically traded over the years, so I don't have that many still. But I've owned quite a few over the years.
And if I was to ask you right now, which is your favorite one at this very moment, the one that you're using the most right now? What is it?
The Elenco DXR8, mm-hmm. Because it has the 12 kilohertz IQ output, so that I can listen to DRM.
And what is DRM selection like where you are?
Not great. Spain has a transmitter in Costa Rica that has a DRM program, but I'm probably going to have to do a lot of work on my antennas in the spring, because there is one guy I know, he occasionally picks up New Zealand's DRM program.
Mark, thank you very much for taking some time to talk with us today. It's always interesting to hear from other SWLs and how they got interested in shortwave, as well as their stories surrounding it. Thank you very much for taking some time out today.
All right, take care.
That was Mark Cody in Ontario, Canada, talking about his history on how he got interested in shortwave radio.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Rory 105, which is PDF 222 journal.
Speed 220, Rory 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
And you are listening to the best of Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Of course, if there's a program that you would like to hear again or an interview that we did in the past, do let us know and we will dig it up and bring it to you. Not literally dig, but I think a better way would be going through our archives. Anyway, now moving from radio, we're going to move to film. A new documentary on the journey of Papua New Guinea women's rugby team to the 2017 World Cup is set to premiere this week at the PNG Human Rights Film Festival. Joanna Lester says she hopes her film about the PNG orchards will help change attitudes about women and inspire people as they watch the team take on the country's male-dominated sport. Jenny Meyer asked the filmmaker about her hopes for the documentary Power Mary and the origins of its name.
The name of the film, Power Mary, which means powerful women, is actually a phrase that some of the female rugby league players themselves talked about early on when I started making the film. We've used the word power in English and Mary in Tokkasin, one of the national languages of PNG, which means women. I think Power Mary just sums up what the women are like both on the field and off the field in terms of the number of hurdles they have and the number of things they have to juggle to pull on their jersey and represent their country in a place like the PNG.
One of the things we know is really a big social problem in Papua New Guinea is gender-based violence and violence towards women. What sort of a message do you think a film like this can do to address that gender-based violence?
I hope that what this film will do and what is different about this film is that it's not explicitly about violence and about the experiences of women who have experienced violence, although many of the women in the team have. The film is not explicitly about that. It's a story of women showing their strength in an unusual way and showing what they're capable of in a field that is traditionally dominated by men and also one that is worshipped in Papua New Guinea, that of rugby league. So I hope that it will prompt, you know, a reevaluation of the mindsets of people in PNG, and many of the players believe this too, and that they think that not just of the film but of the birth of the national women's team, the PNG Orchids in general, that seeing women playing this sport will really go some way towards changing the minds of men and also young boys. And if people in PNG start to see rugby league, their national sport and their national heroes as being a place for women as well as men, that might have flow-on effects to other industries, other jobs, other parts of society and other places where women haven't had many opportunities or much respect in the past.
What kind of response have you had?
There's a huge amount of excitement about the film here in Papua New Guinea. We launched it here this week. It was a preview screening with the players, many people from the rugby league community, students. It was hosted by the US ambassador, so many people from those circles too. And there were just, for example, there were two young boys sitting behind me in the audience. They were probably in their early teenage years, and I don't think they had any connection to any of the players or any of the characters in the film, but watching their reaction to it was really fascinating because they were really absorbed in it. They seemed to really admire what the women were doing on screen and on the field. And that was very encouraging to me. Also, we had a preview screening in Brisbane where a 10-year-old boy came up to one of the Orchids players afterwards and said, "Thank you for that film. It made me think a little bit differently about how I treat girls." So we've just had a couple of bits of feedback so far that makes me hopeful that it could really have an impact.
Do you think you'll be touring the film to festivals or that kind of thing internationally?
Yes, definitely. We've got the film being considered for a number of festivals at the moment in Australia, in Europe, in the USA, and in the Pacific. So far, we've had an opening night film at the Pacifica Film Festival in Australia. That was across Sydney, Brisbane and Canberra. And we are also the opening night film here in PNG at the PNG Human Rights Film Festival next week. But beyond that, I really do hope that this film will have a life in some other countries. There's so few films made about Papua New Guinea and so few about the stories of PNG women in particular that I would really like people in parts of the world who never get to hear anything about PNG to learn a bit about it through this film.
Filmmaker Joanna Lester, and the film will premiere on Thursday at the Human Rights Film Festival in Port Moresby.
Hi, my name's Colin Newell and I'm the editor and creator of DXR.ca. Since the mid-90s, DXR.ca has been the go-to website for timely resources for the DXR, SWL, and broadcast listener. If you're looking for unbiased reviews of the most modern receivers and antennas, or are interested in participating in some of the more lively online forums all about radio, then come on by. DXR.ca, a world band radio website.
Hi, this is Ian McFarland. If you're an SWL and feel nostalgic for the good old days of shortwave, you'll be interested in three sets of CDs that Colin Newell and I have produced. The first gives you 100 ident and interval signals from stations around the world. Then there's the foreign language recognition course that will help you identify the myriad languages that you can hear on shortwave. And the newest CD set, a look at the past 20 years in shortwave broadcasting with some of my broadcasting colleagues, and a look into the future. The proceeds from the sale of these CDs are in aid of a charity, a food bank for the less fortunate in my city of Duncan, British Columbia in Canada. Learn more about these CDs on the dxr.ca internet website. That's dxer.ca. Good listening, everyone.
All right, thank you very much, Ian. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the Best of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Now, if there's a program that you would like to hear again, let us know. Our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. That's pcjmedia@gmail.com. And do let us know where you heard the program. If it was off satellite, medium wave, short wave, FM, online, DAB+, whatever it may be, do let us know. Again, with the same email address. Anyway, on behalf of the whole team that helped look up today's program, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well. Saying so long, take care, 73 and 88 to the ladies.